Well, I'm excited to be joined by Mohammed Ibrahim, a native Egyptian who grew up in the shadows of the pyramids. He's also a renowned Egyptologist, a soon-to-be author, and a famous tour guide who's actually going to be hosting our Megalithic Marvels of Egypt tour this May. Mohammed, thank you so much for joining me today.
You're welcome, Dean. It's always a pleasure to join your show.
I'm really excited to get to see you in May for our tour, and I know you alluded to some surprises you've got. So anything you want to tell people out there that might be thinking about joining us about why they should, real quick?
The name of the tour itself is a very good reason to make people join the tour. We are going to focus in this tour on so many exciting sites, and we will focus on the big structures and the megalithic statues. And of course, that will lead us to talk about the ancient Egyptian high technology and the ancient Egyptian advanced knowledge. So we will explain Egypt from completely different perspective. Yes, we may explain some history, some kind of ancient religion, but we will focus on the techniques, how the ancient Egyptians built these megalithic structures. That is one of the kind. You'll find that most of the tours, they focus on like 1 day or 2 days about this type of information. But in our tour, every day, we will dive deep into the Egyptian history. And not only this, but we will talk also about the possibility of the existence of Egyptian civilizations before 10,500 BC. That is plus high quality accommodation, high quality food, transportation, all the service will be in a very good quality.
Well said. Yeah. And anybody, you can go to megalithicmarvels.com/tours to get all the information. And we hope to see you. So Mohammed, I want to start out in this interview asking you about the most ancient of Egyptian myths and origins. On our last tour, you kind of were educating us about Zeptepi. Can you tell people who may not be familiar with this, tell us a little bit about Zeptepi and how this correlates to the civilizations before 10,000 BC?
The ancient Egyptians left many stories for us, and these stories are called the creation story. When I was studying as a student at the University of Ancient Egypt and was studying the ancient Egyptian religion, and by the way, that is one of the things we are going to fix, one of the informations we will fix during the tour, that this type of story is not related to the ancient Egyptian religion. No, it talks about physics, it talks about astronomy, it talks about great science. But unfortunately, they claim that Zeptepi, or some people sometimes call it Zeptepi, they claim that this is a story about religion or religious story. The ancient Egyptians left us four stories about how the universe was created, not how mankind, not how animals, not, it's not about our solar system only or even galaxy. No, it talks about the entire universe. And they left us four interesting stories. If you put them together, it will create one major story. And from that big story, we will understand what happened millions or billions of years ago. So Zeptepi means the first time, or the moment, the first moment of creation. The first time, that is what some people call it, the Big Bang, or the Nova Star, or the kind of activation led to the creation of the universe, billions of galaxies and billions of, or trillions of stars and planets. So one of the stories called the Ennead, it talks about nine major knitters. And when I was saying they relate this story to the religious aspect of ancient Egypt, they call them nine gods. But I call them nine knitters. And the word knitter, it doesn't mean God, it means force of nature. And there is another story called the Ogdad, eight knitters. And then the story of Bitah, and the story of Ammon. Each one is responsible to explain to us one of the sides, or let's say one of the aspects of the situation before creation. Like the story of the Ogdad, it talks about the eight elements before creation. We talk about darkness, we talk about light, we talk about space, we talk about emptiness, male and female. The story of Bitah, it talks about sound and how the creation was activated by sound. The story of Ammon, it talks about the main element of creation. The story of the Enyad, it compromise that all in physical form. And then the first things started to be created one after the other. Okay, so many people, unfortunately, they see it as separate stories, separate mythologies, but no, I see it as one big story divided to four pieces. So Zebtebi is the word, and by the way, Zebtebi, in my opinion, is not the very old date or not the earliest word we must look for. Now, there is older than Zebtebi. Before the creation, what would the story before the creation? So Zebtebi means the first time.
Incredible. Yeah. Robert Bruval, I believe, proposed a correlation between the Giza pyramids and the three largest stars of the Orion belt. He suggested that there's a perfect alignment, you know, between that goes back before 10,000 BC. Any thoughts on that? Do you believe that the Great Pyramids of Giza, the three, once aligned with the stars of Orion?
Look, if we say that and we stop, or we don't talk more about this, maybe it will be a questionable story or a questionable opinion. And many people will say, maybe other people will say no. And it will be an information subjected to deny, to be denied or to be accepted. But if I add to this story that the ancient Egyptians didn't focus only on that part, but for your knowledge that the ancient Egyptian made a huge list for the stars they could see for the different galaxies. Many galaxies were listed, by the way, in the ancient Egyptian writing. Some we managed to identify, like Cassiopeia. Some we didn't manage to identify, we don't know, but we know that it is a galaxy, but under what modern name, we don't know. There is the word Deshret, Her Deshret, or Deshret Her, the red Horus, that is for Mars. We know the word Jupiter, also related to Horus. Venus, Saturn. So the ancient Egyptian gave names to these planets. When we talk about Sirius, the ancient, in my opinion, nobody studied or made records for Sirius movement more than the ancient Egyptians. For Orion, as you said, and they represented Orion as Osiris. Osiris in the sky was his harpoon, and they made the equivalent of Sirius as Isis, Sobdet. So not only a picture, but they gave names to these stars. So Orion was called Sahu, Sirius was called Sobdet. So we are looking to a huge study, or we can call it great science, was left by the ancient Egyptians to us. And when we talk about the three stars, the Orion belt, in my opinion, of course, Robert Duval made great discovery when he was talking about this, and I agree with him 100%. But in my opinion, this is still like less than 1% of what we must study, what we must understand from the ancient Egyptian knowledge about the stars and about the universe.
Interesting. Robert Edward Grant was sharing with me how Leonardo da Vinci called the pyramids way back in his day. I think it was Mount Taurus, which means bull mountain. Can you tell me anything more about this ancient name before, you know, Giza, Bull Mountain? And I think this might correlate with the Egyptian underworld. Can you tell us anything about that?
Okay. I will be humble when I'm explaining this, because I'm the only one can explain it this way. It needs first to understand some points, and then it will lead you to this meaning. There is a word called Bia in Bit. Bia in Bit, we can explain it, or it, literally, if you open the dictionary from ancient Egyptian vocabulary, you'll find that word Bia in Bit means meteorite, or we can call it the iron of the sky. Okay, and iron of the sky here has two meanings. Some explain it as a meteorite, falling meteorites, okay? Or as I explain it, the ancient Egyptians were talking about the source of iron on the ground, that it is extraterrestrial source. It is not, we all know that iron is not, was not formed naturally on the ground, okay? Because it needs a kind of temperature, doesn't exist in our solar system. So maybe they talk about real meteorites, or they talk about the origin of iron on Earth. Bia in Bit is also a name for, they call Bia in Bit the bull of the sky. Okay. And Osiris, one of the titles of Osiris is the bull of the sky also. And the story says that Osiris was killed and was buried, and he, the first mummy and the first one, was put in a coffin and then sarcophagus. So we understand that Bia in Bit will eventually lay down or be inside this sarcophagus. Okay. So this is can lead us to understand or to know that maybe the one of the functions of these granite boxes is to house this magnetic iron.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Okay. So that will lead us to what? To Apis, the Apis bull, the famous story at the Serapeum. So they read in history books that they bury the Apis bull inside these boxes. What if that this Apis bull, we mistakenly think it is real bull? Well, it is no, it is the bull of the sky, the magnetized iron. Okay. This Apis bull takes the shape, or one of the if we represent this word in the Egyptian, ancient Egyptian symbols, it takes the shape like an angle, like an arrowhead, okay? Like upside down V, double V above each other, okay? You know what I'm talking about? Okay, two. If you look to the Great Pyramid, to the real entrance, the original entrance, you will see this sign at the gate, on top of the entrance, okay? So as if the Great Pyramid is hiding the name Api, or which the Greeks call it Apis. It's originally happy. So the entrance, it shows us that symbol, happy, the bull. So the Great Pyramid itself is hiding or including that word happy. So the Giza Plateau, and someone can say, maybe all the pyramids are like this. No, if you check some other pyramids, you may see similar, okay? But one stone, not two. And the word happy has two, not just one a triangle, okay? So that is my input about how we named the area Rostow. And according to Robert Grant, if we read it backwards, it reads Taurus.
So Muhammad, you're one of the, again, you're a native Egyptian. You grew up in the shadow of the pyramids. You're a studied Egyptologist, but you're one of the very few Egyptologists who believe that somebody before the dynastic Egyptians of 3000 BC built these pyramids and a lot of the megalithic temples and statues that we'll get into. So my next question, Muhammad, is what were the things you saw? What were the clues that led you to actually not just believe, but to declare publicly that I think somebody before the dynastic Egyptians built a lot of the megalithic stuff?
Okay. This is very important question. We can talk about ancient technologies for many years, okay? But we will not come to this conclusion because we can, the situation here is divided into two branches. The first branch is to prove the existence of these technologies and that these sites and these huge blocks, and by the way, we are talking about blocks, either limestone blocks or granite or even alabaster, okay, or quartzite or conglomerate. We are talking about blocks from 2 tons, 5 tons, and 10 tons, which I call it the baby size, to 50 tons, 100 tons, and 300 tons, and 500 tons, till 1,200 tons. And I'm very conservative when I talk about the last weight, because a statue, like what we call it, Memnon statue, the estimate weight is about 700 tons. That is from red quartzite. That is the weight of the statue after it was made. But let's imagine when it was one big block, because the statue is seated statue, so the statue lost part from above the knees all the way to the head. That is almost like 1/3 of the size of the block. So if we add 1/3, so we talk about more than 1,000 tons. What ton? The statue will have the name Ramses II at Ramesseum at the west bank of Luxor. The estimate weight is around 1,000 tons. So we can do the same thing. We can add between 300 tons to 500 tons to the block when it was cut from the quarry. Okay, so we talk about massive size of blocks. No way to imagine that there is, and I'm talking about modern days, I'm not even talking about the ancient days, that there is a way now to cut and to move and to shape these giant blocks. And that is not my opinion. That is the opinion of hundreds of engineers. I was flying to Luxor 2 months ago, and the one was sitting next to me on the flight was an Egyptian engineer, civil engineer, constructions and things like this. And I had a conversation with him and telling him about these blocks. The man was looking to me completely amazed, as if that was his first time to know about these facts. And I asked him that question straight. Do we have a way or a tool or a machine can carry 1,000 tons? He looked at me and he left and said, definitely not. Okay. So that is the first thing that, yes, we can easily prove that there was ancient advanced technology. But we can say these technologies existed during the dynastic time. And when you say dynastic, we talk about 3000 BC to 300 BC, or existed before dynasties, because there is an era, we call it pre-dynastic, 9000 BC to 3000 BC. For sure, 100%, they were primitive people. All the, not all, most of the products they left and their equipments are primitive, so we can call them the cavemen, okay? But they left with these very primitive equipments, they left very high quality equipments, very fancy jars from hard stones. And that is the problem. They did very primitive pottery jars, very, I will not call it very ugly, but let's say handmade. It doesn't show any symmetrical proportions. It doesn't show any high quality, because the pottery wheel were invented during the time of the second dynasty. So all the pottery products from the pre-dynastic were made by hands. So how come they invented these super quality, not just high quality, super quality jars from alabaster, from diorite, from granite diorite, from granite, and some products from amethyst, from lapis lazuli, and from gold, okay? And some fine flint tools. I know flint tools, it will take us immediately to the story of primitive man and the very early times. But when you check these high quality flint tools, you will understand that these tools were made by very high quality advanced tools. So that is my first evidence, the existence of super quality objects during the time of very primitive people. So the solution that these people, of course, didn't do it, didn't make it, but they found it. And if they found it, it was found because an earlier civilization made them. The second important evidence is geology. We have the famous story about the age of the Sphinx, was presented by John Anthony West and Dr. Robert Chock. And according to the erosions above the body of the Sphinx, which we used to think it is wind erosions, and they said, no, it is water erosions. So the famous question, Egypt is not a country with too much rain. Egypt is dry weather from 9000 BC. So we don't have that amount of rain can create or can be the reason of like semi-flood or running water in Giza Plateau, and it can do such erosions on the body of the Sphinx. The only solution that this can happen at 9700 BC, the rainy season at the time of the last ice age. So that means that the Sphinx was already there at that date, 9700 BC. So it was built before this date. And when we say before, so we talk about 10,000 BC, 20,000 BC, maybe 80,000 BC. And there is another important story, the story of the solar disaster, which happened on our solar system and affected Earth. And you can read that in the book of Dr. Lavalliette, Earth Under Fire. And he talks about that disaster, which happened at 10,500 BC. The very interesting thing about that story, it matches an ancient Egyptian story, which we call it the, like one of the myth of ancient Egypt, Sekhmet story. And the ancient, and we call it the destruction of mankind. If you take the names like Sekhmet, Ra, and we replace it with the sun, the solar flare, heat waves, it will give you the exact same story of Dr. Lavalliette. Okay, so these are the three main reasons make me believe that there was earlier civilizations. And by the way, I used to think it was one early advanced civilization. Now I think there are many, not just one.
I'm glad you bring up this ancient pottery or these vessels, because on our last tour, you pointed that out. You can see a lot of these vases in these museums. And again, the point I want to hit home here that you're making, Muhammad, is that what we're looking at, what you're referring to, are these precision machine-like cut granite vases. And you look close, and I mean, the lip around these vessels is absolute precision. Yet the mainstream says that this was made by the pre-dynastic people who they also say were primitive. Like you said, they didn't even have the pottery wheel yet.
Exactly.
So right there, it's clear that they inherited this stuff. They just had it with them and kept it and were using it. It was had to be made earlier. Well, Muhammad, this has been an insightful interview. Thank you so much for your time. Hey, real quick, tell us about your forthcoming book. What's it going to be about, and how can people find it when it's done?
The name of the book is Egypt Before Written History. It talks about Egypt millions of years ago, and then all the ages, geological eras, and then historical eras. And I talk about the lost technologies and the advanced tools. The book is going to be published very soon. I believe it will be published like around April or May. The book will be published in the United States. Billy Carson is my publisher. I believe it will be available on Amazon. Okay, so it will be easy for the Americans to find the book online or to get a hard copy. It will be a very interesting book, by the way.
Yeah, I cannot wait for this book to come out, because I want to use it as a reference guide for all of this. So that's exciting. Congratulations. The book's coming out. And when it does, we'll definitely feature it for you everywhere, okay?
Thank you.
Well, Muhammad, thanks so much again for your time, and I look forward to seeing you this May on our Egypt tour.
Yeah, me too. I can't wait to start this great tour.
Megalithic.